From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, protests are popping up across the country against the Trump administration.
What Trump's administration is doing is designed to make all of our lives worse, and really just to benefit billionaires.
Migrant shelters in Texas are nearly empty.
They have ended any real way for people to cross into the U.S.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The U.S. government began firing thousands of people at multiple agencies as President Donald Trump and Elon Musk accelerate their purge of America's federal workforce. On Thursday, the Department of Veteran Affairs, which provides health care for veterans, said it was forced to fire more than 1,000 employees who were in their probationary period. This week, termination emails were received by workers across the government, mostly recently hired employees still on probation, at agencies such as the Department of Education, the Small Business Administration, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, and the General Services Administration. And the Internal Revenue Service and U.S. embassies were told to prepare for staff cuts. But federal workers and others are pushing back across the country with planned protest. Thousands of federal workers took to the streets this week to protest outside the Capitol, and more larger nationwide protests are being planned for President's Day, February 17th. Not My President's Day, organized by the 5051 group to take back President's Day, according to the group's Instagram page. M.T. Snyder is a federal worker and a national organizer of the 5051 group.
What we've seen with the Trump administration so far are that unelected billionaires have been abusing their ability to influence the government, using their wealth, and also to impact the services that the government provides to everyday people. So we're seeing services like healthcare to veterans being impacted because that's a service that federal workers provide. We're seeing our parks being impacted because that's a service that federal workers provide. Now we're seeing research on diseases like cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all of that is being impacted. And that impacts everyone, impacts all of the American public. What Trump's administration is doing is designed to make all of our lives worse and really just to benefit billionaires like Elon Musk.
Protests have been popping up across the country. Are we at a time now where the protests are getting more organized? Do we have a clearer idea on what is happening with trying to push back?
Absolutely. Yes, the Federal Unionist Network is organizing across federal workers, across agencies, unions, to organize a day of action for February 19th, where there will be rallies across the country. Some will be at Tesla dealerships to bring the fight to Musk, since he's the person destroying the services that federal workers provide and destroying our lives as federal workers and our livelihoods. And so there'll be rallies again on February 19th as part of this day of action to save our services, the SOS, call to action. And we're also doing, there's a big social media campaign for the SOS action on February 19th to wear red, white, and blue and post a photo about how, if you're a community supporter, about how you benefit from federal services, and if you're a federal worker, post a photo about how your work benefits the public. Because right now, we need to be getting into the streets. We need to be talking about how all of us benefit from the services that federal workers provide. And all of our lives will be so much worse if they are able to shut down these agencies and take away the services they provide.
Are you stunned by what is happening in the country right now? We had an election. Trump won that election. He's now president. We really didn't know this was probably going to be the outcome of that election. Are you stunned by where we are right now?
Yeah, I think I am absolutely shocked at all of the different ways that Musk and his minions at Doge have been attacking federal agencies, federal services, federal workers. But I think that this is totally part of their plan right now, right? It's part of a shock and awe campaign to create a lot of confusion, create a lot of distraction, so that it's actually really hard to organize against this because there's so many attacks in so many different directions. You know, just yesterday, we found out that thousands of probationary employees at National Institutes of Health were laid off, as well as thousands at the VA and at other agencies as well. And it's, you know, every day a new piece of news is really like this. A new attack is designed to kind of make it hard for us to focus. But actually what we're seeing right now is that federal unions are at their highest membership that they've ever had under Musk. So despite all of these attacks, workers know that where they need to go is their union, right? And unions provide protection, and that working together in groups and acting together and standing up is how we're going to fight back and stop them.
Many people feel helpless right now. They don't see these protests as a way that's going to bring about change. They're thinking, well, we'll just wait for the next election. Maybe there can be a change in Congress or something like that, and then they'll be able to put a stop to this. But that is not for another couple of years. Do you think that waiting for another election would be too late?
Absolutely. We do not have time to wait for another election. The scale of what they're doing, you know, there's going to be a long tail on this if they succeed. And it's not the type of thing that we can pick up the pieces afterwards, right? If they've dismantled agencies and they've given those contracts to companies that Musk or other billionaires own, we can't just pick that back up, put the pieces back together again. This is something that right now, it is absolutely a crisis where we need people right now doing whatever they can, right? If that's calling their reps or, you know, showing up to the day of action, getting involved, registering on the Action Network page that's I'll just share the link right now, bit.ly/SOSaction, to find out more. Because right now we're seeing every day a different executive order, right, targeting a different group of people. And we also have the upcoming, the continuing resolution, the budget that we have, is going to end in less than a month. So we have a big fight right now to make sure the vital services that keep our nation running are going to continue to exist. So we don't have, unfortunately, we don't have 2 years. The moment is now. But there's a lot of ways that people can tap into. And so I think that just signing up to get updates on the SOS action, just taking a photo and posting it on social media to change the narrative on February 19th, that's really the first thing that we can be doing, right, is trying to help people understand, help each other understand and talk about how we benefit from drinking clean water, from eating safe food, from having safe fridges. These are benefits to us that we will lose if we don't speak up.
Showing up for a protest, if you have mass numbers, will that wake some people up?
I think absolutely, you know, once we begin to change the narrative, which has really been a challenge in how federal workers and federal agencies are perceived, I think that a lot of people are not aware of the impact that losing these services will have on their life, the impact that all the different ways that they rely on federal services. So I think that when people join the day of action, join a protest, join a rally, talk with each other, build community, and then start talking to their family, start talking to their coworkers. That's what we need to stand up together and to tell Musk that, no, that we're not going to be intimidated, he can't take away the services that we rely on. Absolutely. So I think that the more people that can get out on the day of action on February 19th, the more changes we'll see. And that pressure will build, right? No one is immune to pressure, and it's people action. It's movements and large groups of people who are working together for what's right. That's how we've been able to make change in this country historically. And so we're in another moment where that's exactly what we need to do.
MT Snyder is a federal worker and a national organizer of the 5051 group. They're calling for a national day of action on President's Day, February 17th, against Elon Musk's purging of the federal workforce. Since Donald Trump took office on January 20th, he has taken multiple actions against immigration, including launching a mass deportation effort, sending migrants to detention in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and ordering a near-total shutdown of the asylum application process. The number of active duty troops and National Guard, state and federal, deployed to the border now exceeds about 10,000. We're now seeing the impact of the administration's now complete ban on asylum access in South Texas, where migrant shelters are nearly empty. Berenice Garcia is a reporter for the Texas Tribune based in the Rio Grande Valley.
At some point, you know, back when we were seeing these record number of people crossing into the border seeking asylum, these shelters were really at capacity at times, dealing with, you know, almost nearly thousands of people being dropped off on a daily basis. But now that's really dwindled, and sometimes they'll see maybe one or two people. Sometimes they'll go up to eight people. Sometimes there'll be nobody being dropped off. As I've reported in my story, the city itself acknowledged that they're averaging less than 12 people a day for the month of February so far.
As you say, and as we've reported in the past, we've seen really big numbers of people coming through at times. Now, so few people coming through. Why is that?
It's really come down to the fact that the Trump administration has essentially shut down the border, right? On the first day of Trump's presidency, he ended the put an end to the CBP One app, which was the way in which many of migrants were, you know, trying to set up an appointment to make their case to apply for asylum in the United States. But even before that, last year, the Biden administration had issued this executive order that essentially closed off the border to migrants, basically saying that they could not seek asylum in the U.S. if they crossed the border illegally, you know, between the ports of entry. And the Biden administration said essentially, you know, the only way that they could seek asylum is through the CBP-1 app, which, like I said, now the Trump administration has ended. And so, yeah, so basically they have ended any real way for people to cross into the U.S. Now, again, like I said, there are a few people trickling in, a few people here and there that are being dropped off at the respite center at these other shelters. And I've asked, you know, the people, the directors who run these shelters, you know, why these particular people are being allowed in, and they really don't know yet. It's a question that we're still trying to figure out, you know, who are these people who are still being allowed in.
And which nationalities are we seeing from people who are still being arriving at the shelters?
You're still seeing some Central Americans, but, you know, I spoke to the executive director of the Catholic Charities of the Rio Grande Valley Respite Center here in McAllen, and she mentioned that some of the people who were being dropped off were actually locals, people who had actually been living here for years already, but who had been, I don't know, rounded up by ICE or had been detained somehow by some immigration officials, but were somehow reprocessed and allowed to stay in the U.S., which is unusual. She mentioned that that was something new that they were experiencing, and she didn't get a chance to speak to them thoroughly, but she just mentioned that, you know, there would be people in the center and they would say, oh, yeah, I actually live, you know, just down the street over there, you know, that they were just from the area. So it's a very, very strange situation that we're seeing here.
You're writing about what you're describing. Seems like the situation is in chaos.
It's a lot of figuring out what's going to be happening in terms of what will be the fallout of mass deportations. I reported on another case in which a man was deported. He had lived here for 30 years. He was deported. He was not allowed to see a judge, which immigrants who've been living here, even if they're undocumented, if they've been living here for more than 2 years, they have that option to see a judge before they're deported. But he was not given that ability to do that. And so he was deported. But then a few days later, I think CBP realized that they had made a mistake, and they contacted the family, contacted the attorney, and said that they would allow him to be paroled back into the U.S. So he came back into the U.S., but he was given an ankle bracelet, ankle monitor, excuse me, and was told, was given a notice to appear in court in May. And so so there's some confusion, you know, there's these weird instances of people who are deported in a way that they shouldn't have been. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of chaos, I guess. Yeah, that would be the correct word.
Well, in San Antonio, they had a migrant resource center. Saw a lot of people coming up from different parts of the border, stopping in San Antonio and getting their travel arrangements put in place to go to where they have family across the country. That resource center is now being phased out or completely shut down. The concern expressed by the city of San Antonio, along with Catholic Charities here, which was running it for the city, was that the numbers have dropped off to the point where it doesn't make sense to run this center anymore. But also there was a concern because the city was being reimbursed for the funding of this center by the federal government under the Biden administration. And the concern under Trump is that that reimbursement was no longer going to be happening. Are you seeing that in other migrant shelters?
Yes, that's actually been the case for the respite center here. That's run by Catholic Charities of the Rio Grande Valley. They received a notice from the federal government on January 30th saying that they would no longer be reimbursed with federal funds. But again, she mentioned, here I'm referring to Sister Norma Pimentel, who is the executive director of the respite center, Catholic Charities, excuse me, of the Rio Grande Valley. She said that they did receive a notice that they would not be reimbursed, but at this point they were already not using a lot of resources because of the numbers that had gone down considerably. So they had already cut staff and were no longer in need of so much, you know, things like food or blankets or you know, things like that for the people that were coming in. It all comes back to, you know, yes, there's fewer people coming in that started last year during the Biden administration, and that kind of made it so that they no longer needed as many funds.
Bernice Garcia is a reporter for the Texas Tribune based in the Rio Grande Valley. Arts and culture is often celebrated for their profound impact on society, shaping identities, fostering creativity, and preserving history. However, their significance extends beyond social enrichment. They are also vital economic drivers. A new study shows that in Texas, the creative industries generate jobs, fuel tourism, and contribute billions to the state's economy. According to a new report from the Texas Cultural Trust, arts and culture is a major contributor to the state's economy, as well as in other key areas. Jenny Perry is the director of programs for the Texas Cultural Trust.
The Texas Cultural Trust is a statewide nonprofit with a mission to be the leading voice for the arts in education, advocacy, and economic impact in Texas, providing opportunities and resources, as well as spotlighting the artistic excellence of our state. We do this through fundraising, grant programs, scholarships, original research, educational materials, and collaborations with community organizations and schools. And we aim to be an advocate and voice for the arts across Texas.
So what are your findings about the impact of the arts in Texas?
Well, the State of the Arts report is published each biennium. And so in this 2025 State of the Arts report, we've highlighted the significant impact of the arts in culture through our economy, education, and health and well-being. For the economy, first, we know that the arts can generate economic growth, and the arts and culture industry has grown 63% over the past decade, generating $7.3 billion for the Texas economy and nearly $460 million in state sales tax revenue. In education, the arts can also positively impact education. Texas students highly engaged in the arts are up to 46% more likely to pass the Texas Success Initiative's criteria, twice as likely to meet advanced placement and international baccalaureate exam criteria, 20% more likely to earn college dual credit achievements. And all of these criteria are part of the college career military readiness benchmarks. For health, we know that engaging with artistic experience is good for our mental health. Studies show that attending just one cultural event a month reduces the risk of developing depression by 48%. Additionally, the arts support cognitive development in young children and can help remedy cognitive decline in our aging population. For children, structured arts activities can boost cognitive ability by 17%. And listening to a prescribed music playlist can improve blood flow through damaged parts of a stroke patient's brain and can increase functional connectivity by 18%. Music therapy can reduce PTSD symptoms by 30%. The findings go on and on. And we even see that in cardiovascular patients, that both dance and singing have incredible results for heart patients. It increases blood flow. By just singing, studies have found that 22% of individuals who sang Amazing Grace experienced an increase in blood flow. So there's just so many great findings in this report. This is just a few of my favorites, but I hope that helps.
Sure. It does seem impossible to separate the impact of the Texas tourist economy and arts that are created in Texas, performed in Texas, that represent Texas. These seem intertwined. We see a lot of people coming to Texas for cultural tourism. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So 1 in 4 visitors participate in cultural tourism in Texas, and this is also one of our report's findings. The Texas total travel and tourism spending surpassed $94.8 billion in 2023. And so, you know, Texas has done incredible work to increase tourism through the arts by creating Texas-friendly programs across the state. And we highlight those in this year's report through the Texas Governor's Office and initiatives in the economic development programs. The tourism-friendly Texas, digital media-friendly Texas, music-friendly Texas, film-friendly Texas, all of which are really increasing the arts culture in our cities. In addition to that, of course, the Texas Commission on the Arts has wonderful programs across the state, including the cultural district programs and cultural district designations. And the findings are so incredible about the return on investment in these programs, where we see that of the 54 designated cultural districts across the state, they're located in 41 cities. And we have some findings around the different types of return on investment to these cultural district grant program project grants. In general, across the board, as we've studied this for the last few years, we keep finding that it generates more than a 2-to-1 return on investment to the in-state tax revenue. So cultural districts generate business, they attract tourism, they revitalize communities.
Well, how do we know that this investment is necessary? I mean, what if, doesn't art just sort of just spring up on its own?
Oh, I love that question. Of course, we know that the arts are critical. It's a critical element of our culture. It's an important part of who we are as human beings. But in Texas, especially, you know, Austin is the live music capital of the world. You know, the arts thrive in areas like Houston and San Antonio and Dallas and El Paso. The arts bring communities together through different venues like museums, symphonies, performance venues, music events, music festivals. These are things that not only attract people from across the world, but they bring our own Texans together. And it's, and it really is what brings our communities alive. And certainly not, we can't expect them to just pop up on their own. There's something that we must invest in. They can't sustain themselves or promote themselves without some sort of patron. So of course, Texans get to be patrons of the arts. Students get to be patrons of the arts, but a strong economy requires investment. And so certainly we must invest in the arts across, you know, from education into business to support the arts in order to thrive in Texas.
Well, what does a strategy look like that's designed to maximize the positive benefit of the arts? And unfortunately, we live in a world where we got to put a dollar tag on those types of things. But obviously, the real benefit of the arts doesn't have a dollar sign on it. But how do you maximize things? How do we make sure that we're doing the right investments at the right time at the right locations?
Well, this year we have a great opportunity through the legislative session. There have already been bills filed to support arts education in schools by creating weighted funding to support programming. You know, arts education comes with a cost. And for many children across the state, especially those in rural and Title I communities, students cannot afford the instruments on their own. They can't afford to take those classes or private lessons on their own. So that's where weighted funding would certainly support access and opportunity for young children to experience the arts. So that's an opportunity right now. In addition to that, of course, the Texas Commission on the Arts also has requested $11 million over the biennium in exceptional items from the Texas legislature. And that would support both arts organization grants and cultural district grants, both of which would invest in those cultural assets across Texas, in our arts programming across Texas for young people and for adults. Those are perfect examples of how we can right now immediately support and invest in the arts. But of course, all Texans have the opportunity. There are programs in every community that Texans can enjoy the arts. They can go and be patrons of the arts, go to museums, go listen to live music, go see a theater performance or a dance performance. And this can happen in schools or in professional venues.
What's the biggest data point that you want people to know?
Well, of course, that the arts and culture industry generates $7.3 billion for the Texas economy. It's an economic driver, and that art can and does improve education and our health and well-being. These are critical.
And is public support necessary in order to continue that?
Yes, public support is absolutely necessary in order to continue having access to arts education in equally across Texas, and also to have arts opportunities in every community.
Ginny Perry is the Director of Programs for the Texas Cultural Trust. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.